Blog Talk Radio.
Dark side of the dark moon. Penetrate. Alchemy, chemistry. Penetrate all the way from the cosmos. Extraterrestrial, manifested from the infinite celestial. You see, close your eyes, let your higher self rise. Then you deify, then you visualize. It's like thumb to the index, to the blood, to the fire. I burn like nuclear fusion, elevation on a higher plane in my brain, maniacal black dot. Knowledge is rock like Johnny Locke. I'm locked in the Western economic bondage, making me a social psychopathologic. Fill my brain with the math and science of the ancient. I'm like a war from Algeria in the army ranking. Living in the Western hell was my rehearsal for self-mastery in the black dot universal. Alchemy, chemistry, what is and what was and what was shall be. Alchemy, chemistry, what is and what was and what was shall be. Alchemy, chemistry, what is and what was and what was shall be. In my spiritual, physical, physics of matter, mental, lyrical, expressions only, change can stop it. But it's just continuation, the change is constant. The structure is variable due to atomic arrangement. Structure shifts form when atoms get to changing. Ice to water to mist, same substance. Now paper turn to ash through the combustion. Put the cerebral in paralysis when a scribe speaks. My oxidation creating light and heat. Energetic, prophetic, nothing synthetic. 21st century reincarnate, comedic. Cause I am what my DNA did transmit and determined to be my characteristic. Mysterious like the Sphinx, the atom of the phantom. Exercising mind over matter. Alchemy, chemistry, what is and what was and what was shall be. Alchemy, chemistry, what is and what was and what was shall be. With oblivion for the millionth time, overload. Green trees about to make my brain explode. In the vast ocean of what God's achieved, manifest what the mind conceived. I nod off, sitting in my crate late as I think. Woke by blunt of longevity, hypnotic lore heavily. Ultimate impenetrable recruit on the dark side of the dark leaf's truth. Black dot from Israel Hill, top. Hotep, we are messengers of rock. To the mountain and the moon for sun, photo exposure. Establishing the four corners of the earth, composure. Osiris, Rosier, resurrection of Kemetic Pharaoh. Horus was the inner vision, omniscient. Kemet, Egyptology, alchemy. What is, what was, and what was shall be. Alchemy, chemistry. What is, what was, and what was shall be. Alchemy, chemistry. What is, what was, and what was shall be. Alchemy, chemistry, absolute, zero, infinity.
Become Sui, become birth, Aristo Klein. Ja aquatic, consequence phenomenon, built defensive. The eye mind's peduncle vine, finite peduncle. Cognition, blitz, augment, somatic convision. Devoid, genesis, divine, geotectonic ploy. Set bionic, blitz to ultimate, rock core. We are at war.
Looking to find out relation is ineffable. The true shadow of the ego. Light magnified beyond imagination. We have come in the form of exercise to help our identifiers with the reflection.
Looking
to find out.
Alchemy, chemistry. Absolute zero, infinity. Alchemy, chemistry. Absolute zero, infinity. Alchemy, chemistry, absolute zero, infinity. Alchemy, chemistry, absolute zero, infinity. Infinity.
Penetrate.
Came from the depth of space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depth of time and space with the power of the Sphinx,
stepping through the stargate. All I view is nothing new, just deja vu. A clue of my afterlife, a previous one before this one too. The shell of my essence, shed skin, stepping into my photonic origin. Genesis without the gin. Garden of Eden collapse like nemesis, saving humans in a time lapse. Feel my solar energies and give room to me. I got nine celestial spheres in tune with me. From the underworld to this world, I use my principle. It's the infinity that's invincible. The unmoved mover, primordial heal. Still communicating with me at will. Through the arc amulet, photons they project. Like a fifth dimensional holograph that steps. Brainwaves telepathically reach to deep. Giving me revelation in REM sleep. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. Offshoot from my comedic predecessors. Inside a nation of millions like Abraham's children. In the wilderness willing to do what I must to survive. And all this job, animated dead that's alive. Around my parameters from La Brea to Vanessa. Ignorance is what kills you, what a nigga will do. Me and my folks, totes, busy with smoke. Various hydroponics that makes one choke. But no lead to smoke with the blunt and the lighter. You can come and build, but you gotta respect the cipher. We're doing too much, observation is the policy. Fool jab too much and get trapped in idiocy. Hush up that crap, put that BS on the shelf. No outside interference, just building on the self. Brain rolls off the depths of time and space with antiquity of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. Clear night skies, hope it's like this tomorrow. On the California border, looking at the constellation from Barstow. Area 51, not far from here, I feel nervous. As I create magnetic disturbances. But I get contact from way out there, out of the nowhere, a Pluto's orbit. Prepare for invasion of the energies in the last hour. Clash of the titans over universal power. Dark signs, exercise, and mystify. Magical methods of power to deify. A man over the evil of degeneration and aging. My vision's not blurry, even as a centurion. Walking the earth, 22nd century AD. Mystic, phenomenal complicity. Live by laws of nature, tied as a black fist. That which exists will always exist. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Power of the Sphinx. Higher nature over lower nature. Self-mastery, black dot universal.
First World Order Radio, finally, we are on the air, no doubt. All right.
There's always going to be somebody in the building on First World Order Radio.
We get on into some of that order consciousness tonight.
First World Order Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m.
We got to talk about what is taking place on the planet.
There's always going to be somebody in the building on First World Order Radio. First, we need to let you know we're going to be doing more shows, giving out more information on Wednesdays. Wednesday at 8 o'clock, we are now going to make this is the hottest day of the week.
Preceding others in time, order, and importance, the most prominent parts, voices, or instruments. Earthly state of human conserving existence, an indefinite multitude, quantity, or distance. System regulates the ring of our specifics in the group based on value and natural characteristics. Current radiates electromagnetics of sound through the FM as your thoughts transmits it. Preceding others in time, order, importance. The most prominent parts, voices, or instruments. quantity or distance. System regulates to bring about specifics in the group based on value and natural characteristics. Current radiates electromagnetics of sound through the air, same as your thoughts transmits it.
You need to understand how magical this, something like this every Wednesday can become. So you need to start getting your calendar right, get your schedule right. You need to know our intention straight out.
All right, so, I mean, these clues are given throughout the various languages was to piece the puzzle of this ancient mystery school back together again.
And what we plan on doing, both of us, is bringing y'all some surefire dynamite. We're going to take this level up a notch. We're going to have stuff to do here. This is not just going to be about philosophies and theories. Shit that works.
You have activated pioneer brain in which I produced this black chemical called melanin.
What we did was gave a hard line in the sand between the different definitions of esoteric study and exoteric study. Playtime is over.
Peace, back again with Force Water Radio. My co-host, Brother Fahim, getting ready to bring you on, making sure that these technical difficulties are out of it. Brother Fahim, are you on the air?
How I tell you, Washington East, Brother Dr. Aleem.
Sir East, how you doing, brother?
Fine, brother, fine. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent, brother.
Wonderful.
All right, we got a special show tonight. We have Grandmaster Victor Moore on. Brother, if you're on, please hit number one on your phone in order for we can bring you in. All right. We're going to get into some information dealing with the martial arts and what is called Manchu arts. Getting ready to bring on my other co-host tonight. That's Brother Jelani Bay.
Hey, how I take Washita East, Brother Prince?
Washita East, how you doing, brother? Grand Shee.
All is well, all is well.
All right, all right. All right. What we're going to do for right now is go over some information concerning martial arts, in which that, of course, ancient comedic teachings was called Manchu, in which that Manchu was, I guess you can say, connection to Min or Amen, all right, in which that symbolized the war god, the same in which that becomes Ares within the Roman mythology or Mars. Within the Greek mythology and more within the Roman mythology, in which that becomes the god of war. In martial arts, of course, we understand that it's part of survival of humanity based on the fact that you have to learn how to defend yourself, protect yourself in all times and in all occasions. And, you know, we want to build with that, you know, tonight, you know, as we get more into it. I know, Brother Jelani, you've been studying martial arts for many, many years. What's your take on the information as far as that's concerned?
I mean, it's very accurate. Martial arts is one of the most primal skills from the beginning of time. You know, man has always had to survive. You know, there was a time when we didn't have machine guns and 9mm, you know, and not even spears, you know, even primitive rocks. You know, so the fact that our ancestors codified the martial sciences, Aha Zakir, Mandu, you know, in ancient hand-to-hand combat sciences, you know, is very, very credited. As a matter of fact, we have to understand that it was our ancestors who founded a lot of the martial arts systems that you see today. A lot of animals that exist in the Oriental countries are not indigenous to that country. They were brought there by our ancestors, you know, and our ancestors mimicked the animals first. You know, so, and with all due respect to the Chinese and the Japanese and the Okinawans, you know, our skill base gave them their base for their martial sciences, you know, from Damo to Shinto priests, Buddhist priests, they all are schools that we brought about. So in the 43 years of martial arts experience that I have, I've seen some very, very great martial artists, including, you know, Mr. Moore. I've never met him in person, but my instructor told me about the exact incident we'll be talking about tonight, dealing with Bruce Lee, Shidoshi Ron Van Cleef. So that's my take on it. It's absolutely correct, Brother Prince.
All right, definitely. And, you know, when we get into the martial arts thing or Manchu arts, you know, we also have to, you know, we see that on the walls of Abydos, the Temple of Abydos, or what is called Seti I, as well as also on the temples of Amenti, we see wrestlers, we see combat artists, you know, who's, you know, who's practicing with sticks and different other weaponry, you know, right there on the wall. You know, in ancient Kemet or ancient Tamaray, Egypt. And that's something in which that is very special. And the book is called What is Karate? It actually shows how the stance within Korean karate or Taekwondo came right off the walls of ancient Egypt and how it was very similar. You know, so, you know, we want to keep that in perspective also, like you said, how the information traveled from out of Ethiopia or Kush into India, and then from Bodhidharma being from the Tamil, you know, which means the followers of Atum, you know, how they follow, you know, how he went into, and also being the so-called Buddhist or follower Ptah, you know, and Atum and Ptah is actually one and the same within the Kemetic teachings. You see that he went into China, and it is said that he sat, you know, with the Shaolin priests, and they was falling asleep. So he taught them the 18 Han Lo styles, in which that became what is known as Qigong or Tai Chi, you know, in which that later on we get the Wing Chun, and then, of course, Kung Fu and et cetera, in which that, you know, as it developed, you know, and, you know, migrated from China into Japan, you know, became karate and the different other forms of martial arts in that particular aspect. So we understand that very well, you know, and so what we want to do, let me go to my other co-host here, Brother Fahim. I know you want to say something about it, being that you also studied the martial arts for quite some time.
Yes, I've studied the martial arts since I was 15. And
right.
I studied under the Korean Hapkido under Grandmaster Bang Dong Shin, and it was a seventh degree Hapkido expert. And from then, you know, I studied other martial arts, karate when I was stationed in Okinawa, and I studied certain literatures of Bruce Lee. His Dao of Jeet Kune Do, which he had a profound effect on me as well, you know, how to really understand the art of fighting, period, how to not to be studying under just one art or one form of fighting, you know, which is most of our martial arts styles are pattern or certain set patterns, and which you shouldn't just fight in just a set pattern, because it wasn't too realistic when it came to actual street fighting, and how he had revolutionized the martial arts techniques with his Jeet Kune Do style. Yes.
Right. Well, we get ready to bring on Senior Grandmaster Hanshi Brother Victor Moore, 10th degree Dan, and Edgar Shu Wu, which is the founder of the Traditional World Karate Association. I have the background here. Moore has studied martial arts, you know, for over 50 years and is a four-time world karate champion and actually is the first world karate champion in America. You know, he has various instructors. One in which that I've seen in which that is mostly spoke of is Robert Trias. And that this was, he said this was karate. He stated that karate competition back, you know, when he was, you know, in the 60s and 70s was full contact and there was no weight division, you know, and, you know, so when, you know, you were struck, you know, he said you bled, you know, and things got knocked around and out of place. You know, he defeated almost every, he defeated every national champion there was competing during the 60s and 70s. Chuck Norris, Jim Harrison, Mike Foster, Alfredo Gurney, James Hawkins, Jim Kelly, and even beat Bruce Lee in a speed contest, a drill, 4 out of 6 times. Matter of fact, Victor Moore defeated Bill Superfoot Wallace, you know, and y'all might, you know, remember some of that. And he also, you know, defeated Mike Stone, you know, who actually, I think, after 91 straight victories, you know, Dr. Moore came in and defeated him. You know, he also defeated, you know, so-called greats like Joe Louis to become the first USKA World Pro Karate Champion. You know, so he has accomplished a lot, you know, in his days, you know, and the crazy thing is that it was under extreme racism. You know, I remember he told me, you know, how he was the world champion and the magazines, you know, would barely even speak of him or write of him, you know. So, you know, we definitely want to get into those things, you know, and now we get ready to bring on Senior Grandmaster Moore.
Hello.
Greetings. Greetings. How you doing tonight?
You got me here. What's up?
All right. Yes.
Hello. Mr. Ali,
yes,
we got Vic Moore here.
Yes. All right. Okay, we got you loud and clear.
I've been trying to get on the air here, but everybody been stepping on me there. I had a little trouble getting hooked up here. You hear me okay?
Yes,
well, you got my history pretty much down. A few little points need to be brought out there.
Oh, yes, yes.
First of all, I guess these people need to take a minute and go get them a cup of aspirin because all that I've done, they'll probably get a headache from trying to believe it all and comprehending it. So can we give them about a minute or 30 seconds to go grab a couple of aspirins and come back?
Yes, we can definitely do
well,
that.
Well, okay, everybody out there in listening land, go get you a couple of aspirins. Get you a cup of aspirin or a hot cup of coffee or a glass of tea and come on back and sit down. First of all, my name is Victor Moore. I'm 70 years of age. I've been in the martial arts for 64 years. I don't think you can look around and see another person that's been out there as long as I have, or longer than I have. And my competition record is quite impressive, but I'll take off and go a little bit and tell you how I got started. Brother Aleem, how much time do we have? What time tonight do we have to wrap this up? Before midnight or what?
Yes, before 11.
I'm going to try and tell them a little bit about my history. I know I can't do it all in one day, but
right.
Y'all sit back and relax. I started off with jujitsu and judo back in the 50s, 1950s, 7 years of age. I went to the YMCA and took up boxing, weightlifting, and after Oyama came over here around 52 and demonstrating karate and killing the bull with his bare hands, man, I was already into the martial art, so I was impressed. I wanted to learn some of that karate stuff. I pursued karate by bugging one of my community military person who was studying or working out in the park. And we didn't have dojos back then, so don't even think of a nice, pretty dojo with a hardwood floor with mirrors and stuff. We were outside in the woods. That's right, out in the woods. And he was doing katas and all. I didn't know what he was doing at the time, and I went up and bugged him, asked him if he'd show me some of those karate moves. No, get away, kid. You're too young. I kept bugging him, so he was going to make an example out of me. He was going to make it so hard on me that I wouldn't bug him no more, probably. But me coming up, already working jujitsu and judo and weightlifting and boxing at the 9th Street YMCA in Cincinnati, Ohio, I was pretty much fit. Well, he finally decided to go ahead and start teaching me when he seen he couldn't run me away. I was beating on trees, kicking up, hitting limbs and everything else, and I kept pursuing it. And year after year, I was right there with him. Back in them days, your parents tell you, well, come on in the house, boy, and eat and leave that karate stuff go. No, Mama, I don't want to come in. I want to study. I want to practice. Once in a while, I had to run on in the house and get a bite to eat and then run back out. But I stayed with it for a number of years, and finally there was a judo school that opened up in Cincinnati. I went downtown, as it was called, and that was to the white man section, and black people didn't go in the white man establishment back then. This is the late 50s and all. Well, they allowed me to come in. Now, this is in the rough part of town. And let me point out something to these young folks nowadays. They don't know about Brother Ali, that black folks wasn't allowed in a white man establishment. Black people had to ride on the back of the bus. Now, you raise your hand out there if you ever had to ride on the back of a bus to get somewhere. Only two or three of you out there probably can raise your hand, you know, and you're probably over 60 or some years of age. You couldn't go into a restaurant and get something to eat. They wasn't allowed. They didn't serve black folks. How many of you out there can raise your hand and say you experienced that? You're on a trip and they don't even feed you. You can't even go in the restaurant. That was even during my, some of my high school days on the track team and football team.
Right. Some of us only seen that in movies.
Yeah. They finally let me in. I started learning more about judo and all, and then they opened up a little karate in the back room. Now, most of the guys that's been around a long time know what I mean when I say they open up a little karate class in the back room, because everything back then in the 50s and 60s was judo. They didn't have karate schools. They had judo, and May taught a little karate in the back room. Well, they let me get in, and again, this is letting me. This was not, I pay my money, so I'm going to take it, and that kind of attitude. It was, sir, can I join? Can I get in? So I finally got in, did very well. I was very disciplined. And the instructor, Harvey Eubanks and Bill Demetric, was there. And they took a liking to me and let me stay after class and show me a few extra pointers. I helped clean the dojo and all. And that was my start. So being a black back then was very difficult to even be accepted in to a white man establishment. And then if you got in, you you was the ookie, because they going to work out on you. And I went on to college after a number of years, pursued more karate, and had a Japanese person there teaching, and he was also doing karate. He let me start working with him, but he wouldn't let me join the Japanese Karate Association after I had became a black belt and all. And he said that Americans just can't belong to the Japanese Karate Association. Well, I figure it's just because I was black, like everything else. So I had kept working out with him. I didn't need to join a national association, didn't know too much about any national association. There was another organization that had gotten going. Dr. Robert Trias out of Phoenix, Arizona, had started the United States Karate Association, which was in a couple of the magazines. And some of the first tournaments in North America was really up around Canada, Toronto and all that way. And after I left college, I opened up a little karate class on Beekman Street in Cincinnati, had a handful of students. We decided that we were going to go to Canada from Ohio, and we were going to partake into some of this competition, which we did. And we did pretty fair. Old Vic Moore, he did pretty fair. Not as good as I wanted to do, but I made an impression because someone remembered me when I came back. There I was again. Well, being the only black out there, I knew I had to stand out like a rap sore thumb. And I began to travel throughout the Midwest and the East Coast, competing and winning. Dr. Robert Trias, who brought karate to America in 1946, as I pointed out, who started the first karate association, he was always the head man at these tournaments, and he took a liking to me, saying that I've been winning and fighting pretty good. Wanted to test me for my second degree black belt, which I had already got a first degree black belt. And I had to spar with a fellow by the name of John Keyhaw, better known as Count Dante, the deadliest man alive, later was told to be. Well, he was pretty vicious. Count Dante, the deadliest man alive. I had to spar with him, and nobody could keep up with him, but I did. So Master Trias was very impressed and taking me over different techniques, stances, and forms and all. And after fighting him, seeing that I was ready for my second degree black belt. Well, that was a big step back then. In the 60s, wow, you moving up in rank. Because back in the day, they wasn't trying to see how many karate students they could get. They was trying to see how fast could they get rid of the ones that they had, white or black. Some of the old-timers may remember that. These young guys, they don't know nothing about that. This day and time, everything is about the dollar. Smorgasbord karate, they come in, oh, we don't want to. Any of that, those push-up stuff. Or no, I just want to break some boards and do some flying kicks and all. They, along with the parents, is telling the instructor what they want and what they don't want. And these instructors, just to get the money, is letting parents and everybody else tell them what they want and what they don't want. Back in the days, you did what the instructor said. There wasn't no smorgasbord karate or McDonald karate. So I began to win tournaments for the United States Karate Association. In 1965, I fought one of the toughest fighters, who was a Japanese champion, North American champion, Canadian champion, United States champion, Foster. Big Mike Foster, being about 6 foot six or seven, up in there, weighing 270-some-odd pounds. I was weighing 170 pounds at the time. I fought him, and I defeated him for his first defeat. Master Robert Trier said that was the best match of karate he had ever seen. Well, I couldn't let this big guy touch me, because if he did, he would hurt you. He was so strong and big, he'd reach out, grab a guy by his gi, lift him up, hit him, and then throw him down. The ambulance be sitting at the edge of the door. Some of the old guys may remember when we had the ambulance always at these tournaments, because somebody's getting hurt. Well, I had went up into a crane stance, curled up there, which I normally do to take any oncoming attacks or kicks. He kicked me so hard, he sent me out of the ring and into the bleachers. I said to myself, oh, shoot, well, this ain't going to work. So I got to work of a strategy. So I went through his legs, jumped up on his legs, swung around his back, chopping him, dropped down through his legs. I was like a mice fighting an elephant. I was all over him. And I won. Winning that match made me become the first African-American national karate champion in the world. That's one title I'm very pleased to carry. That was back in 1965. You can imagine a black person out there trying to win in competition, and the white people are telling you that you're not going to win, you can't win, and wasn't going to let you win if they could all help it. But I got a pretty fair shake. My points was called, and I won the match. It was in the paper and made pretty much history. The first African-American national karate champion, black. What a feat. Well, in 1966 at Richmond, Virginia, I won the world championship for the United States Karate Association, defeating the all-Hawaiian champion at that time. He was undefeated, and his first defeat came to my hand. I'll kind of speed it up here now. In 1967, Bruce Lee was brought to Ed Parker's international tournament in California. Ed Parker was one of the first pioneers, along with Dr. Robert Trias. He was out on the West Coast there. And he stated that we have a celebrity here in the house. We have Bruce Lee, Kato of the Green Hornet, and he challenged any of us national champions to a speed drill. Well, Bruce Lee and his folks had been asked many times, how good is he? Is he that good for real as they make out in the movies? How would he stack up against these real competitors? Now, you folks out there in listening land, you go ahead and take one of them aspirins. Mr. Lee, give him a chance to swallow one of them aspirins. Okay, you got your aspirins down? You ready?
Yeah, they ready.
Let me tell you folks out there this. Superman was not for real. That was for the movie. He didn't fly. kids used to jump off of buildings thinking they could fly and hurt themselves back in the day. Y'all may have heard about some of that. But Superman was not for real. Batman was not for real. That was for the movies. The Hulk, two real individuals, but hey, the Hulk was not for real. Nor was Bruce Lee a real karate champion. Hate to bust your bubble. He was a good actor. Made a lot of good movies. Our hats off to him. Because the directors did more with his movies than all of us put together doing karate to excite people to take karate. Because back in the days, karate was so strict and hard, people couldn't take it. It only may be one out of 100 that could last for more than a month or two in a karate class. So what you see in the movies is for play. It is choreographed. These actors are not fighting anyone for real. The stuff that you seen Bruce Lee doing was for the movies. That was choreographed. It means that they knew what each other is going to do back and forth, and one guy is going to be the victor of the match. It is not a real match. I hate to have to burst some of y'all bubbles, but y'all think everything you see in the movies is real. Get out of the dream world, the fantasy land, and get real. Well, what happened with the match between Vic Moore and Bruce Lee? Bruce Lee stated that he had a punch that was so fast that nobody could stop it. At the Internationals in 67, there's all these top champions out there. Karate people is pretty egotistical, like most athletes. They have to be to have that much adrenaline and key flow to keep yourself afloating. Can't be a sissy boy. I can't do that. Oh, I don't know if I can. To be a champion, you got to have some fortitude. Well, there's all these national champions out there, and Ed Parker, who gave the tournament, who made the announcement, said, is there any challengers? Nobody jumped to challenge Bruce Lee. Well, who's he, was some of the comments. He's just a movie star. Other comments was, well, what's in it for us? A movie role, maybe? Well, maybe. Maybe some money. Maybe we might get some big of that money he's making. They shunned him. It was just a big joke for most of the folks out there. He had never beaten anyone. He didn't have a reputation of being a champion because he never fought. He never fought. You cannot tell me one person Bruce Lee defeated. Give him a second to think on it. You can't tell me one major tournament that Bruce Lee won. Give him a second to think on it. All you know about Bruce Lee is that he was a good movie actor. Yes, he studied some karate. Yes, he did some karate, but so did some of you guys. And the movies can take you and make you look any kind of way that they want in a movie. Well, to be labeled a champion, you had to have competed. For you to be labeled as a champion, you had to have competed. And you had to have won. How can you label yourself a golf champion and you never play golf against anyone? You only did it in the movies. Making holes in one and 30-foot putts and this and that, and you can't hardly even play golf or any other sport. Well, what you see in the movies is choreographed. So here we are in a real situation. a champion against a movie actor. Ed Parker walked over toward the USKA group. That's the United States Karate Association, which was one of the top groups at that time. And there sat Artie Simmons from Erie, Pennsylvania, one of the top champions in the country. Jimmy Jones from Chicago, Illinois, sitting there, one of the top champions as well, from Chicago, Illinois, one of the top champions in the United States. And myself, Victor Moore from Cincinnati, Ohio, at that time where I was living. Here we are, three of the top competitors in the country. And Master Tria says, I have some fellas over here that can take him. Master Tria says, one of you guys can jump on up there and see what his Jeet Kune Do is all about. And we, like everyone else, just kind of waved our hand. Who say, you go, Jimmy. No, you go, Vic. No, you go, Artie. And we just made a joke out of him, like everyone else was doing. Master Tree is getting a little irritated. Ed Parker, he says to Master Tree, maybe she's just that fast. Master Tree says, hey, look down at me. Victor, get on up there. Well, naturally, when your instructor speaks strongly, you better get to moving. So I jumped on up there. Ed Parker says, well, we got a challenge. Everybody started applauding, and Bruce Lee stated that now he has a punch that is so fast, he's going to come in, he's going to back up three or four steps, and he's going to come in and tag me in the chest, not hit me hard, just going to tap me and come out, and I won't be able to touch it. I say to myself, now, you say what? Making him repeat it for the audience. And I'm saying to myself, now how in the world is he going to pull this off? He's going to step back three or four paces, wait, come in, tag me in my chest, and I'm not going to be able to touch it. I said to myself, lightning is fast, but I darn near keep up with it. How in the world is he going to pull this off? I got to see this. So he squared off, asked, are you ready? I nod my head, said, yes, I'm ready. He comes in with a speedy punch. I done saw his ear move, blink, his eye, boom. I know he's coming, he's moving. He come in with a speedy punch to punch me in the chest, and I blocked it, boom. The crowd go wild. Woo! Did you see that block? Whoa, they blocked it. And everybody's laughing, hooping, and hollering. Bruce Lee being a little embarrassed at the time. Well, boy. He said, well, let's try it again. Okay, so I'm getting more looser. See, the lighter your body, the faster you can move. Y'all want to know about speed, how you move so fast? You can punch a bag and do all that stuff and jump around and jump rope and all, shadow box and stuff. The lighter your body, the quicker you can move. Timing is more important than speed and strength. What good is your speed if you can't hit me? What good is your strength if you can't hit me? Timing is more important than speed or strength. How do you develop timing? My association is the Traditional World Karate Association, TWKA.co. You can go to my website. Y'all can get some of my DVDs and instructions and stuff. I'm just on here just to talk to you a little bit, let you know some of the true facts, not to give a complete karate course, but you're getting one of the biggest and most important lesson here, and that is timing is more important than speed and strength, work on timing instead of speed. Well, yeah, work on speed, work on strength, lift weights, do all that crap, you know, boom. But I guarantee you, timing is more important. So, Bruce Lee, he comes in for the second punch, and I blocked it. Boom! I know he's coming, telegraphing. See, everybody telegraph when they get ready to move. Me, you, him, her, yes, you do. You may not know it. I said everybody telegraph before they get ready to strike. It may be your hair, it may be your eyes, it may be your eyebrow, it may be your nose, it may be your lips, it may be your ears, it may be your throat, your breathing, it may be a hand or a shoulder. I said everybody telegraph before they move. You just don't know it. You haven't been studying it. You gotta study the body. You gotta be able to even sense when a person is gonna strike at you. You don't have to wait till you see the movement. Well, we'll get into that a little bit later too. So he comes in for the second punch, and I blocked it, and the crowd goes wild. Woo, they're stomping their feet. They're hoping and hollering. Did you see Vic Moore block that punch? Oh, man. Bruce Lee reached out and pat me on my right arm and says, boy, you're fast. You're the fastest American I ever seen. Well, thank you. Well, yeah. He says, let's try just one more time. And he don't ask me if I'm ready, but there was a loud noise up in the bleachers, and I, with my eyes, not with my head, but I kind of glanced off, looked up into the bleachers to see what had happened, that big loud noise, somebody probably stomping their feet. And he struck out at my head, and he only came 2.5 feet away, never even came close. And when my eyes glanced back, I kind of just swung at it like you hit at a fly. And I started laughing. And I say, Bruce, now what was that? You're supposed to be punching at the chest, and here you trying to sneak one in at the head. Well, I hadn't really noticed how far away it was at that time. And I'm bent over laughing. I had my finger, and I was pointing at him. And I said, you striking up here at the head, and you're supposed to be punching down here at the chest. And I'm going almost down to the floor laughing at him because he's trying to sneak one in. I said, Bruce, okay, I'll give you that one. I done blocked your first two. And he was getting ready to walk away. And I said, oh, wait a minute. Oh. He looked. I said, let me show you how it's done. You block mine. He, well, that's okay. I said, no. You threw two, and I blocked it. I'll give you that one that you tried to sneak in at the head. Now you stop mine. Well, at this time, the whole crowd, 1,000 people around, is quiet as a pin dropping now. Now they want to see this. I back up the same distance. I ask him, I say, are you ready? Yes, he says, ready. I'm loose. Now, remember, the looser your body, the lighter you are, the quicker you move. I'm loose as a goose. I'm light as a feather. Ask him, are you ready? And I move in lightning speed. Boom. Tapped him in the chest and come out. Boom. He swung and missed. I said, okay. I said, we'll go again. Well, yeah, we'll go again, Bruce said. I'm light as a goose, lightning speed. I said, lightning is about to strike again. And I moved in even faster, lightning speed. Hit him a little harder in the chest, boom, and come out, and he missed. I said to him, I said, woo, I'm faster than the Green Hornet. So, Bruce Lee was pretty. pretty much embarrassed. He was like, people's laughing, boo, you know, yeah, the Green Hornet, yeah, boo. Did you see Vic Moore? Boy, you see how fast he was? Man, wow, that's that USKA over there. Wow, when people just are hooping and hollering. Well, Bruce Lee looked very embarrassed. I said to myself, well, Bruce, come on, we'll go one more time. No, that's okay. I said, well, you do three, I'll go three. And I was just feeling sorry for him, and I just really, honest to God, threw just a regular punch to see if he could stop that, which he did. But, and that's why I said four out of six times I beat Bruce. Well, years that went by, and O'Hara, whoever this guy is, he's writing a book and putting in Bruce Lee Unstoppable Punch, and he had Vic Moore, the four-time world karate champion, and he threw eight or nine punches at Vic Moore, and Vic Moore couldn't stop none of them. That's a bold-faced tale. And he better start changing it before we sue him. That is a bold-faced tale, O'Hara, whoever you are out there writing them books like that, Black Belt Magazine or whatever, whoever. You better watch your writing. So, I got a call from Frank Duke, who the movie Bloodsport was about out in California. We talk from time to time. We're working on some projects. And he said, Vic, did you ever slow that punch down and watch it, freeze it, that Bruce Lee, they say, scored that one punch on you? I said, no, not really. I ain't paid too much attention to it. He said, well, do it. I put it in my machine, my VCR, and I put it on slow speed, and there's some lines on the floor. And I'm 2 feet behind the line, and he's 2 feet on the other side of the line. And I says, well, if he passed that line, I'll give him credit for that one punch that he tried to sneak in at my head. Bruce Lee lunged out, arm fully extended, legs fully extended as far as he can reach, and he's 2.5 feet away. I said, well, I'd be darned. All these years I gave him credit for that one punch, and that punch wasn't even close enough to even count. But after he had struck, then he steps in like he's close enough that he could have struck. But if you look at that line on the floor and see how far back I am from it and how far back he was, and then when he threw the punch, it never even crossed the line. Do that, folks. Don't get teed off at me. Just look at the footage and you'll see it for yourself. Now go ahead and take your other aspirin. Let's give him another minute here. Second to take that other aspirin.
All right.
Okay, so they take that second aspirin, take the bust through bubbles. Now, if this guy is writing in his book that Bruce Lee was supposed to be throwing these punches at my head, that's a bold-faced tale. He's supposed to have been throwing the punches at the chest. Well, Aline, listen, if the punches were supposed to have been coming at my head, then why was the first two at my chest? Duh.
Right. Exactly.
So it's history, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is what is written. Whoever write the history, that's what people take it to be. Well, back in the 50s and the 60s, there was so much prejudice. They didn't write about the blacks back then. They didn't write about the minorities back then. And if they did, it was just as prejudiced as they probably could be. Now, all white folks know some of my, naturally, some of my best friends and some of the best people that we have is white. But on the whole, no. They're prejudiced. They're prejudiced. And some of them to this day admit that they were Ku Klux Klans and they were prejudiced and it was just the time, you know, and all. And I've been asked, how did I fake it? How did I retaliate? Well, in certain ways I did, but that was just the time. Yeah, I got on the back of the bus. Yeah, I had to let them bring my food out to me. Yes, I couldn't be checked into the hotel. Yes, I went to tournaments and they told me I'm not going to win because they're not going to let me win. I had points not called on me. June Reed's tournament in 67 when I beat the All-Korean champion, he was undefeated. And I kicked him out of the air. He went up in there to do a jump sidekick, and I went up and kicked him out of there. I treat him like he was a baby. I spun him around, slapped him around. They almost riot. They had a delegation, about 16 people from Korea over here, and they had to call in the highway patrol and the sheriff's department. But me and my guys, we carried my samurai sword and all because I did demonstrations of cutting a potato off of a student's neck. So we was real prepared, but he wouldn't even let me fight for first and second place. The final four came down, and we supposed to do the round robin, two fight for first and second, and two fight for third and fourth. You know, the two winners would fight for first and second, and two losers would fight for third and fourth. He would not even allow me to fight for first and second. That's when Joe Louis won June Reed tournament 67. I ain't going to even get into that. That's why he won. That's how prejudiced things were back in the days. Well, so Bruce Lee, he threw two punches to the chest and one to the head, and the one was supposed to come, that third one was supposed to come to the chest as well, but he pulled it 2.5 feet away, not even close enough to make it count. So when you go home, or well, y'all already at home, so when you turn on your YouTube and you look at it, slow it down. Even if you don't slow it down, you'll see he's fully extended. He can't go any further. He can't get any closer to me. His hand is fully extended. It can't get any closer to me. And it's 2.5 feet away. And then he steps in like he might have been close enough that those that one blow could have scored. So I take that one away. I beat him 5 out of 6 times. Well, after that, he's telling me I'm the fastest American he ever met. He's a nice guy. We're talking, you know, we embrace, you know, blah, blah. And he wanted me to check out his Jeet Kune Do, how that worked. We did a little rondo and a little sparring around in private, more or less. And it didn't work. He's jumping, bouncing in and out. That crap don't work, ladies and gentlemen. You can't be bouncing up and down. You're telegraphing. If you're bouncing in and out, when is the man going to strike? When he's bouncing away from you or when he's bouncing towards you? In, out, let your common sense work with you. If a person is bouncing up and down, when are they going to set? Let your common sense work for you. You can't be bouncing up and down. Karate doesn't call for you to bounce up and down. You come from a stance. You come from a karate stance. And you got to learn how to move from those karate. What we call kegakis, we got 7 kegakis, 7 ways of moving in. We slide in, we step, drag, we shuffle, we pivot, you know. We got different ways of moving in. Well, that's what you got to practice. You don't practice jumping up and down, running around. Well, if you're going to box, yeah, you can do that crap. Most of the people nowadays think they're doing karate. Hello? You know that, brother? They think they're doing karate, and they're not. They're doing boxing or kickboxing or street fighting. You can go to the park and look at the kids. They're doing the same thing out in the park. You don't have to know karate to do that crap that they're doing nowadays, jumping up and down, bouncing in and out, and jabbing each other in the chest, just jabbing. We have a certain way we punch in the art of karate. And if you've never been taught a karate punch, then go to a dojo, that's a training school, that teaches real karate that'll teach you how to punch. A karate technique, not jumping up and down. These people nowadays, they go to a karate school, Aline, and they put on the gloves and just kick and punch a bag and then knock each other around and go home and say they had a karate class. Bull crap, you ain't had no karate class. All you done was kick a bag.
Oh. Right.
You have stances. You have strikes, blocks, punches, kicks, certain ways. You don't just swing your leg out, and if it hits the man, then you call it karate. In this day and time, anything that y'all do, as long as you got a karate suit on and a belt, you think you're doing karate. You're not doing karate. 75% of the people out there that call themselves doing karate does not know that they don't even know what they're doing is not even karate. That's a shame. They actually think what they're doing is karate. They're bouncing up and down, jumping in and out, and they think that is karate. It is not. It is not.
Right.
I don't care who you're training from. Well, see, we got tournament karate, and we got street karate, and we got dojo karate. Stop that crap. You only got one, and that's the right way. You only got one way to teach, and that's the right way. Why should you pay your money to go to somebody to teach you something wrong? Well, you don't even know it's wrong because your instructor don't know it's wrong because his instructor didn't know it wrong. Well, Vic Moore, how did it so far out of what? Well, Helene, you see, back in the day, karate movies got so popular that everybody wanted to be a karate man or woman. Everybody wanted to teach. Everybody wanted to learn. Well, everybody began to open up karate schools. You remember, I don't know how old you are, but there was a time that it was just a kung fu space. Everybody's kung fu fighting. Kung fu fighting. Well,
right in the 70s.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. And everybody wanted to be a kung fu man. Even our, I have to laugh at it, even our taekwondo people. You know what they had in their windows?
Kung fu.
Every Korean karate school, and you would lie, you would tell if you say you didn't. If you taught karate back then, you had kung fu on your window along with your taekwondo.
Right.
Well, see, also what happened when the Koreans start coming over here, they wanted to take over karate in the North America and throughout the world. They did a darn pretty good job at it because they good business people, and they all stuck together, and that was their plot. They started it off, their meeting was up in Canada. Well, I was there. I was there when they had one of the first meetings. Ernest Liv, bless his heart, who's passed on, I heard, was in a train wreck. He was in the meeting, and he spilled the beans because he spoke Korean, and he was married to a Korean girl, and he told us what all was said and done in the meeting. But they were to see that only Koreans win a tournament, and if not a Korean, then a Korean stylist, and if not a Korean stylist, a friend of a Korean. Every Korean had to create some kind of occupation. They had to have a wig store. They had to have a grocery store. They had to have some kind of store where all of them would patronize to create the money to open up these big schools and have the fancy mirrors and all that stuff. And they were to give out black belts a lot sooner and quicker. They were giving out black belts in 6 months and 8 months and everything else. And you would tell if you say they didn't. I know. I was there. Some of my students was there. See, I'm not going to say something that I don't know for a fact.
Right.
So They start giving out these black belts, so everybody's going to these Korean schools, Taekwondo, and they're getting these black belts a lot sooner. Your instructor got his black belt a lot quicker than some 5 years or so would it take to get a black belt. And that's why I'm so against these young kids, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, wearing a black belt. I'd be darned, it takes that long to get a black belt. How are they going to get a black belt and they're still a baby? The instructors give it to them so that they can make more money. They make their school look good. And if your son is wearing a black belt or your daughter's wearing a black belt and they're under 12 years of age, it's because, well, we'll get into that later, too. Well, also what happened, Brother Link, is that the Japanese had confiscated Korea. And
right. The
Koreans was under the dictatorship of Japan. And they got mad, naturally, at the Japanese in Okinawans. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. Well, now, you folks out there, ask any Korean that's over 16, 17 years of age. They'll tell you themselves. No, they didn't like the Koreans. You know, talk about white and black being prejudiced. Whew. And the Jews, man, the Koreans couldn't even marry their own women. Well, they got so mad. Now, like I said, folks, yeah, I'm black and I'm 70 years of age. Ask one of your Korean constituents or friends or a relative or a person down the street that's over 60 and 70 years of age about it. They'll tell you. If they want to speak about it, they may not even want to speak about it. But look, it's a search of history, you know, on it. So they didn't want to have anything to do, Brother Lee, with the Japanese. So
right. They
got back at the Japanese by taking the red belt and making the red belt down to the brown belt level to disgrace
right. The
grand masters of Japan and Okinawa and all.
Right.
So now
right. The
red belt start taking presence instead of a brown belt. That was
yep. A
slap in the Japanese face. Now you see all these red belts out there instead of brown belt and before black belt, and that is a slap in the face us grandmasters, the people that started karate of these systems and brought karate to America. What color belt do you think they wore? They wore the red belt. How dare you wear a red belt and you're just a student? A red belt in any of the martial arts is for a grandmaster. Did you hear what I said? I said,
that's right.
Red belt is for a grandmaster in all of the martial arts. Well, but see, my style, Vic Moore, is different. My style is Taekwondo. Bull crap. Your belt does not represent your style, your school, your association. It represents your years of study and knowledge. It is of knowledge, not of a style of karate. Stop that crap. Get educated. A red belt is for a grandmaster in Aikido, in jiu-jitsu, in judo, and darn sure in karate. Look at the founders of karate. What color belt do you think they wear? Well, how dare you wear the same color belt that they wore, and they put their life, blood, sweat, and tear into it, and here you come up within a year, and you're going to wear a red belt. I've been in the martial arts for 64 years, and I wear a red belt, and here you're going to come stand beside me with a red belt on? Well, one of my students, he'll probably slap you down. Well, be cool. Calm down, Vic. Calm down. But that really irks me to see you instructors out there that don't know your history and to not even look around and see that a red belt is for a grandmaster. Well, at my seminars, I'll ask you like this, and at a tournament, I try and be a little bit more calmer. And I would say, if you have been doing something wrong over the years, if you have been taught something that was incorrect, if you were doing something that you knew was disrespectful, would you change? Would you stop it? Or would you be so egotistical and so conceited and so one-sided that you would continue to do what is wrong? Well, if you were taught that a high block was a low block and a middle block was a punch, and you come to find out that what you have been teaching for the past 10 years was wrong, would you change? Would you correct it? Well, the Koreans now, they didn't want to use any term that the Japanese used. The word karate means empty hand. It's a Japanese word. That first letter means empty. That second letter of the word means hand, empty hands. It's a Japanese word, empty hands, karate. Well, the Koreans didn't want to use that. They used taekwondo. Well,
right.
Brother Aline, do you drive a vehicle? No, Vic Moore, I drive a Toyota. Brother Aline, do you drive a vehicle at all?
No, I don't drive no vehicle. I drive a Toyota.
Do you do karate? No, I do taekwondo. All you're saying is that you're doing Korean karate. Korean
That's
karate.
Right.
Well, now, if taekwondo is not karate, then why did you come to a karate tournament? If taekwondo is not karate, then go to a wrestling match. Go to a judo match. You do the same darn thing that we do in karate. Now, you could call it whatever you want. Well, okay, folks, we won't call karate no more karate. We won't call it nothing. Let's see, Brother Lee, we can come up with a name. Let's call it Coochie Coos.
Right.
All right, everybody in the world, we no longer do karate. We do Coochie Coos. Now, you do Coochie Coos, Korean Coochie Coos. You do Japanese Coochie Coos. You do Chinese Coochie Coos. You know, boom, we got four major systems of Coochie Coos.
Right.
You got Chinese Coochie Coos, you got Okinawan Coochie Coos, you got Japan, Japanese Coochie Coos, and you got Korean Coochie Coos. Now, every country is going to have their own Coochie Coos to England, France, even the United States, and all. Don't get so facetious. Don't let me have to get so facetious with you. It is all karate. That's only the name
right.
that we use. And the reason we use the word karate in the Japanese language is because the Japanese language is the universal language for karate.
Right.
All these different sports, they got their own lingo. Golf, birdie, something other, whatever. I don't play golf, so I don't know. And soccer, you know, and they got their, that's even football in itself. And, you know, tennis, ace, deuce, or something other, whatever, you know. I don't play that. I just do karate, you know. They all got their lingo. Karate lingo is the Japanese language. In 1922, when we started a competition, well, not we, because I wasn't there. I wasn't born until 43. But when they came out with competitions for karate by Funakoshi doing the draw punch system, the draw punch system means that you pull your punches, you don't make contact. Yes, back in the days, a tournament, a match was almost like a death match. Brother Lee, you hear what I'm saying?
Yes,
that
definitely.
That was almost like a death match.
Right. Full contact.
Well,
like you said, no weight division. Right.
Beg pardon? So
like you said, no weight division.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. So karate came on down, and most of your Japanese karate, one of the major systems is the Shotokan. And Korean karate came out of Shotokan. Well, somebody want to correct me? No, I did not. Well, okay, boom. I ain't going to even argue with you. Shotokan was the main subject, and
when karate's left Japan and went to Korea. It was Shotokan. Call it whatever you want. Change the name. Some would say Kang Sudo. Well, okay, it's still Korean karate, came out of Shotokan. Okay, bye-bye. We'll argue that later. And that's why the katas are so similar to Shotokan, the Korean katas.
Of course. Absolutely.
Well, so this is a little bit of Vic Moore's history. So I think I finished up with the Bruce Lee thing. And I just ask you folks to go slow it down, look at your tape, and you would see. Now, here's one thing, one proof. When Bruce Lee threw the first punch in on me, there was in the background up in the bleachers now, there's a guy walking up the bleachers going to his seat. When Bruce Lee threw the second punch on me, the guy in the bleachers got a white shirt on. He's crossing over, and he's going, and he's being seated. The third punch is the same punch over and over. There's no more movement in the back. Look in the background. You would see everything is the same. You would see me laughing, and what they're doing, they're carrying it a little bit further each time, and you see me bending over, the eagle patch on my back, the world championship patch on my back, and you get to see a little bit more of it each time. It's the same punch over and over. Look at the background. Look at the guy walking up the bleachers on the first punch. Look at the second punch. He's crossing over. Also, look at Bruce Lee reach out and pat me on my arm. But why would he be patting me on my arm? Because he was telling me I was the fastest American he ever seen. And the third punch, he's 2.5 feet away, not even close enough to reach. But guess what, Brother Lee? They don't even show the punches that I threw.
What about the
Vic Moore punches? What about what he threw? They don't even want it to be seen. Why?
World
history. You folks out there, y'all need to get on to these writers. Well, I'm getting on to them. What about John Cochran and Emily Faucus and Lennox and stuff? These guys that write in the magazine and these history books and stuff. Why don't they write about the blacks? Why don't they put the story out there? You know, boom. Let history be history.
Well, that's what we want to do.
You know?
Yeah, we got to put our own version of the story out.
That's right. That's what we want to do.
Hey, there you are, girl. Where you been? Have you been listening to me?
Yeah.
All right, I was wondering where you're going to jump in there. Well, don't let these folks tell you about these Koreans. It's Taekwondo. It's not karate. It is just Korean karate. That's all it is.
That's how I was taught.
Now, in 1967 also defeated the all-Korean champion at Jewelry's Tournament. In 1968, I defeated Joe Lewis to become the first world professional champion. That's not the brown bomber Joe Lewis, the black guy. This is the white guy that got a lot of publicity, more publicity than anybody else in karate probably, except for Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was a movie star, not a competitor. And Joe Lewis and I, we fought at San Antonio, Texas, for the first professional karate championship, and I beat him. Well, they don't speak about it. You don't read about it. Well, why Vic Moore did all this and beat all these people, why don't I know about it? Because they don't write about it. Because y'all don't see that these writers write about us minorities and people. Call John Cochran and ask him why you don't write. Emily Faucus and Lennox out there. Y'all know any of them writers out there? O'Hara, who writes for the Black Belt magazine? Write him a letter. Ask him why you don't put Vic Moore in the magazine. Are they still prejudiced? I don't know. I know back in the 50s, in the 60s, they say, well, we're not going to put these blacks on the front cover of the magazine because it won't sell. Well, we're not going to do any big articles on them because it won't sell. It's not of interest. Bull crap. Stop all that stuff. You know, I was watching the Jackie Robinson story the other day, and I could see some of the same fella that I went through, that he went through. I didn't have to weather as much of the name
slinging around, but yes, I was called those N words and stuff. And I did chase a few people down the street, you know, but that's another story. Yeah, I made some of them get down on their knees and apologize, you know. Yeah, I did a lot of things, you know, to stand up, but I wasn't really, you know, against them like that, you know, gonna hurt them or so, like the Klansmen did. But when you read my book, you'll read about me eating in the Ku Klux Klan's restaurant down in Denton, Kentucky, with the pictures up on the wall, and I ate some of that barbecue down there with them, and some of the other stories. I also, in 1970, defeated Bill Superfoot Wallace. Well, before they went, no, I'm missing out. That was Mike Stone. Mike Stone had 91 straight victory. Brother Liam, I heard you telling the folks some of this stuff, too, but for them to hear from the horse's mouth, they say, well, he said it, you know. But Mike Stone, he was one of the top champions, and all these guys was good. If they weren't good, I wouldn't even be mentioning their name. And he was beating guys and putting them in the hospital about like Mike Foster was. And he'd come in with a sweep and a ridge hand, and 2 or 3 feet in there, they go flipping over and on the stretchers and on their way to the hospital. Well, we had never fought, and I knew we were going to have to meet one day. And Mike Stone there, good fighter, one of the best, you know. And there we are at the team championships, and it comes down to he and I. And he's a drop kicker. Britt Wren, a drop kicker, Jim Harrison, a drop kicker, and I'm a drop kicker. These are some of your best drop kickers we had in the country, and all them guys are super champions. Jim Harrison and Pat Burleson and Fred Wren, lightning speed. I know he could have beat Bruce Lee probably to himself. Jimmy Jones and Hardy Simmons could have. But anyway, these guys be so fast that you can't hardly even see their techniques. And Mike Stone and I was fighting, and I went down to do a drop kick on him, and he blocked it. And I laid down and looked up at him and said, whoa, this guy blocked my drop kick? You don't block my drop kicks. I scored with my drop kick. And he probably smiled and said, well, next thing I know, he came in and he drop kicked on me, and I blocked it. And I can imagine the thought that went through his head, and I said, whoa. So we going back and forth, and he came in with his favorite technique. He hooked my leg to sweep me and was coming with that ridge hand, his deadly ridge hand. And I saw it coming between my eyes, and I said, oh, Lord, I'm in his trap, into his web. And I, knowing judo very well because all of my years of judo, I countered. I swept. I went lower than him, reversed the sweep, and came and caught his arm, and I came across his face with that ridge hand, Haito strike is called. And I hit him between the eyes, and I swept him and sent him airborne and flipped him over, and he came down on his head and shoulder and had a dislocated shoulder. Whew, boy, that was a fight. He's one of the best. He's one of the best. But I beat him. You don't read about it. You don't hear about it. He went for years and years saying he's never been defeated and there's not a man alive can beat him. They kept nudging him, saying, hey, what about that Vic Moore? Well, he's the only one. Well, no, but you don't read about it. They don't say how he lost. All they say is that he was disqualified because he couldn't continue. Why he couldn't continue? What did he do, slip on a banana peel? Did he slip on a shoe stone? Come on, folks. What happened? Get on to these writers. All these guys, this Cockerell, John Cockerell, well, why is not in the history book?
That's right.
Where's Emily Fox at? Where's Lennox at? Where's O'Hara at? They write the Black Belt magazine and the history books and all. Where are they at? Call them out. Come on, write them. Call them up on the phone. You know them? Hey, Facebook them. Ask them why they don't write about the minorities. Why they don't tell the story about Bruce Lee and Vic Moore. Why they won't say how Vic Moore beat Mike Stone, Mike Foster, and Joe Louis. Oh, they mention in the book. Oh, yeah, you know, you'll see a little bit of write-up here and there. Bill Wallace, you know, yeah, he's undefeated kickboxing. Yeah, but Vic Moore beat him in the non-contact ring for the world championship in USKA. These are big tournaments. These ain't your backyard tournament, but they don't write about it. You don't hear about it. But all these guys, you know, they get all the write-ups and stuff. Well, there was some black guys out there. Vic Moore wasn't the only one. You had Thomas LePuppet from New York. You had Jimmy Jones out of Chicago. You had Artie Simmons out of Erie, Pennsylvania. You had Russell Perone out of Rocky Mountain area. And my good buddy Steve Sanders Muhammad out there in California, living in Atlanta, Georgia now. Steve Sanders, God, he must have beat everybody out that way and some. You couldn't beat Steve Sanders Muhammad. And they would cheat him. He would say, by just, I'm going to open up my own association. He's got the Black Karate Federation. Of course, he's also a member of our Traditional World Karate Association. And Jimmy Jones up there in Chicago, you know, and all that. There was a lot of good brothers out there at the time. Vic Moore wasn't the only one. I might have been the pioneer, the first one, you know, and all. But you don't hear about these guys. They don't write about them. All you hear about is Chuck Norris, Joe Louis, Bill Silverfoot Wallace, Mike Stone, you know. Where's all the brothers at? And then when you see them on Facebook, you see all the white guys, you know, but yet when you go to a tournament, it's all the brothers out there, you know, winning. So naturally there had to be some of the brothers on Facebook and these pictures and stuff when these guys are showing all these championships and all. Then I'll finish up by telling you about my chimpanzee. I trained a chimpanzee to do karate, and you wanted to know, can I come over there and work with you? Well, if I can work with that chimp, you know I can come over there and work with you then. Yeah, I trained a chimpanzee. I got the chimp when she was 4 years old. That was probably one of the reasons I was able to get her, because when a chimp is 4 years of age, you got to get rid of them because they're too vicious, too mean. Teeth are too strong. They crack bones with it and everything else. And I worked with that chimp for the first 3 months. We had to fight every day, and the chimp had to respect me. Good thing I knew judo, jujitsu, karate, aikido, weightlifting, boxing, and a hell of a karate man. If I didn't know all that, I probably wouldn't have been able to handle the chimp. But the chimp finally got tamed. The chimp lived in a total human environment. She got up to about 150 pounds. She was 5'2" or 5'3". Big chimp. Wasn't no little bitty chimpanzee. This chimp was big as a human. And she dressed herself, shampooed her hair, brushed her teeth, lived in a total human environment, fixed bacon and eggs, could drive a car, not good, sit up on the parking meter and drink a soda while traffic goes by. Went to tournaments. I took her to karate tournaments. She demonstrated karate at the various tournaments. And don't come to the karate school. Oh, my God, because you may have to fight the chimp. the students was familiar with her. They wasn't really afraid of her, you know.
But they darn sure didn't want to have to fight the chimp. The chimp knew all the different techniques and all. And I did it as a dare, pretty much so. I said I could teach anybody anything karate if they had a heart and wanted to learn. The chimp wasn't that crazy about learning, but she began to like it, and I did. I trained her. She got up to her yellow belt. So my association, I started the Traditional World Karate Association. I first had the name of World Karate Association, and that was when I seen karate going downhill. Koreans and everybody start coming into karate as a high-ranking black belt getting off the ship. They was green belts and brown belts, and next thing you know, they done open up a karate school and was a fifth-degree black belt back then. That's unheard of. All of them was claiming to be all-Korean world champion 5 years, 7 years, ridiculous stuff in a row. There's only 1 year in a year, so how could all of them be, you know, 5 year, 7 year world champions and all? And they wasn't that good. They were okay, but they really weren't that good. I never lost to a Korean champion or a Korean competitor. But I never lost to too many anybody. But they wanted to take over karate and they put a good job at it. And when they got into the AAU, by being organized, see, they stuck together. They was organized. They pulled their money together. They pulled their rules together. They didn't argue and bicker with each other on what's going to be a point and whatnot. And the AAU and the Olympic Committee seen how organized they were, and they went on and got into the Olympics. And the other styles wouldn't work together, wouldn't agree, and that's how they got so far ahead. Then some of the Okinawans and Japanese karate seeing these red belts out there, because they're in the Olympics and all, they start wearing red belts instead of brown belts, and we got to stop that. You guys stop it right now, tonight. Don't come to my tournament or anything that I'm affiliated with wearing a red belt unless you're a grandmaster, been in the martial arts for over 40-some-odd years. And we will tell you to take it off. A red belt is for a grandmaster. It does not represent your style. Well, Vixie, my style, I don't want to hear it. Hush. The belt does not represent your style. It represents your rank, your knowledge, how many years you've been in karate. Well, see, our style, there you go. I don't want to hear nothing about your style. The belt does not represent your style. Well, what if I said, well, okay, my style is Shorinryu, Okinawa karate, and I'm going to change our belt system. We're going to go white and then black and then green and then polka dots and then lavender. Oh, no, Vic, you can't do that. The black belt, well, now wait. Oh, y'all doing it with the red belt. Why can't I do it with the black belt then? Maybe. You know, I wouldn't even speak that low. Just stop giving your students a red belt. A red belt is for a grandmaster in Aikido, Jiu-Jitsu, Judo, Karate. A red belt is for a grandmaster. These founders of karate, us masters now that's been in karate for 50 and 60 years, hey, you are being disrespectful. If what you're doing is disrespectful, if what you're teaching is wrong, would you change it? Then I'm telling you, a red belt is for a grandmaster. Quit using a red belt for a brown belt. Go back to the brown belt and keep it. Now, Steve.
Grandmaster.
Kadir, we used to have a white and black belt. Then we went white, brown, and black. And then competition started. We had white, green, brown, and black. That was it. Then as competition got more heavy, then we went white, yellow, blue, green, purple, brown, and black.
Never. Nobody. Jules Reed brought Taekwondo pretty much to the United States out in Texas before he went to Washington. He wasn't no giving out red belts. And also, speaking about jewelry, when he came out with those pads, the hand gear and foot gear.
Safety kick hands.
Do y'all have one more aspirin you can take real fast? I hope you got an extra one, because let me tell you about something else. Jewel Reed did not come out with his pass for y'all to beat each other brains out with. That was so that if you slip with your technique, it wouldn't injure you or your opponent. It was not for you to make full contact. Karate is not a full contact art. Now, kickboxing is a different art. Full contact is a different art. MMA is a food, a different art. And this MMA, you know, Joe Lewis and I, we introduced kickboxing and all that stuff on the Merv Griffin Show back in 69. Yep, you talking, you listening to the man that started all that full contact stuff. Jim Harrison and Vic Moore, Greg Burns, and Joe Lewis was in the first kickboxing tournament in the United States out in California. So, yeah, we started it, and it got out of hand, and all it is street fighting nowadays. What is MMA doing of martial art? Do you see any MMA fighter doing Aikido technique?
No.
I didn't think that you could. Do you see them doing any real jiu-jitsu technique? Not grappling, not wrestling.
No.
No. No, you don't.
No. No locking, no locking, throwing,
MMA doing any judo techniques?
No.
No, you don't. You don't see. You may see an arm bar, and we have an arm bar in judo. But as far as judo techniques, no, you don't see any judo. Not real judo. Do you see any real karate technique? Well, Silverman, you throw a back kick once in a while. You'll see a spin kick once in a while, you know. But other than that, do you see any real karate techniques? We punch a certain way. Now, do you see MMA people throwing a karate punch or technique? No. Unless you call that crap that you do a karate. But if you're doing real karate, it is totally different than what they're doing with MMA. MMA is supposed to be mixed martial art. I don't see any martial art in MMA, and neither do you. Because the stuff that they're doing is stuff that kids can do off the street. You can go to a bar and get any two guys off the bar stool and put the shorts on them or a uniform on them, and they can do that same crap there. Now, you call that martial art? See, martial art, karate is an art and science. And if you're not doing the art of karate, you're not doing it if you don't have the scientificness of it. So a karate technique, listen to me, folks. You don't need an aspirin now for this one here. Karate technique should be a scientific maneuver. There should be some scientificness of the move. It should also be artistic in some way, form, or fashion. Now, hear what I said. If you get up there and just jump and slap and fall around, there's no artisticness to that movement that you're doing. Your kids can roll around on the floor. That's not artistic, and it's not scientific. See, ladies and gentlemen, there's breathing that goes along with the karate techniques. There's concentration and meditation and face expression and flow that goes along with your karate technique. it's scientific. The body has certain pressure points, nerve centers, media lateral of the body. And you should be studying to learn where to strike these vulnerable spots. And it is done with a technique the size of a dime. You punch with bone alignment. So we got to start learning what bone alignment is all about, what it is. And then where do we strike? Oh, I kicked the guy in the head. Well, where did you kick him in the head? How did you punch him in the head? What part of the head did you hit? And what were you trying to do? Were you striking the fontanelles of the head? Or were you striking the medulla oblongata of the head? Then what were you trying to do when you struck the head? Well, I don't know. I just punched him in the head. I just picked him up inside the head. See, you're not studying the artisticness of karate, the scientificness, I mean. Did you punch him in the chest? Well, yeah, I hit him right in his heart. You did? What part of the heart were you striking for and why? Oh, I don't know. I'm no doctor. Yes, you are. If you study the art of karate, you got to know so much about the body. As I tell with doctors and nurses and all I tease with them, I say, you guys got to know so much about the body because you got to fix it up. You got to keep it intact. Where we come along, we got to know so much about the body because we got to know where to hit it, to tear it apart, to disrupt it. Get where I'm coming from on that? So when you strike the chest, you're hitting at the heart. What part of the heart? Well, the heart got four chambers. Well, where are you striking and why? Well, you want to be striking to the left ventricle of the heart. Why? Because that's the part that pumps the blood. And if you disrupt that, you can call an fibrillation, and you can stop that heart from beating, you know. We have in the medical field what is called a cardio thump. Person heart stop, we can take our fists and hit the heart real hard there at that spot, and it causes it to get back in the rhythm, and we can save a life. Or if the heart is running okay, then don't hit it there and at that spot like that because you can cause it to get out of whack and die. Where is the gallbladder at? Oh, I don't know. It's where's the spleen at? Where is it? I'm no doctor. Where's the tibia nerve at? The what? Where's the femoral artery? These are the areas that we strike at. If you don't know these areas, then you're not really learning the scientificness of the martial art. See, that's why Kung Fu, acupuncture, and all is so related. It's because that's where we strike. So, just a little, so I said I wasn't going to give y'all a complete karate class, but you get me an idea. I live in Leland, North Carolina. Leland, L-E-L-A-N-D, North Carolina. 7013-7013. Pinecliff, P-I-N-E-C-L-I-F-F, one word, Pinecliff Drive. 28451. My phone number is 910-253-6121. You want to chew me out about something? You want to debate with me about something? I'm all for it. And if you want to learn something, if you want to learn where to strike the body, how to strike, why is artistic, why is scientificness? See, if you watch the Olympics and see them ice skating, you'll see some artisticness. They just don't get out there and do any old movement and say they're ice skating. So if you want to get up with me, feel free to holler at me. And my association is the traditional world karate. When I seen karate going downhill, I said there got to be an organization that would maintain a set of standards. The World Karate Association, I started in 1975. Hanson, he picked up on the name and he had some financial backing and ran with it, and they went all over the world.
Hilda? Yeah, we're still going. Well, if y'all can hear us, we want to take this opportunity to shout out our 14th annual conference. It's the United Ouachita Healing Expo. I'm really excited. It's going to be here at our location at 2188 White Oak Road. That's Kelly, North Carolina. We don't domicile in Fayetteville anymore. It's Kelly, North Carolina, 28448. We're really excited because this is our 14th year, and hopefully you can hear me, but we are not renting from the Caucasians, the Arabs, or the East Indians. So we're going to be experiencing the freedom like we haven't before, so we're really, really excited about that. Also, if you can hear me, inshallah, the Grandmaster will be coming, building, as you can see. Raw food, cooked food, go to the website, DrAlimElBay.com. That's D-R-A-L-I-M, as in mother, E-L-B-E-Y.com. Go there, click the first link where it says home and hover over it, and then you'll see the 14th annual conference. And then there you can see exactly what to expect. Massive fire. So bring your stuff for your rituals, readings from the chiefs. It's going to be going on. We're really excited. We're going to be going to the beach together. Tai Chi, Qigong, acupressure, acupuncture. Oh, a $10,000 vibration for $150. So it's really, really good. Oh, we're going to be having smoothies, so bring your money for that. If you want to, you can stay in White Lake, Wilmington, or Elizabethtown, or you can bring a tent if your money's funny and you want to have a place to domicile, you know, on the land. Bring a tent, sleeping bag, da da da. The weather is going to be amazing, so if you're coming down from the north, come on and, you know, get some sun. You know, so we're really, really excited. I'm telling you, I can go on and on. Let me see. Anybody else want to add on?
Yes, I enjoyed the Grandmaster's lecture tonight, and I did copy his phone number, and I want him to know that I will be calling him for advice and things like that. This is Brother Fahim Rudinil. Yes. I won't be able to make it down for the 21st, 22nd, 23rd for lack of funds, but next year I will make up for it.
Yeah, because we probably could have let you catch a ride with somebody, but definitely we're going to hold you to that, guy.
Okay.
Honestly, we want to have we want to have multiple ones, because now that we're on our own space and we inspire people so much, they just spin off and start doing their own thing. That's a great thing. You want to be inspirators. I'm glad to be amongst the inspirators. And Aleem also will be having a birthday party for him, too. You know, I'm really excited. It's just like going down. I want to be doing like Zodiac parties. You know, we really going to be conjuring energy. But this time, it's talking about enhancing you. You're going to be learning Tai Chi, Qigong. You know, you're going to be getting Reiki attuned and certified.
Mm-hmm.
I can go on and on. It's going to be a beautiful time. It really is. Again, that's 2188 White Oak Road, Kelly, North Carolina. 248-448. Oh, yeah. Everybody also will receive an unclaimed property listing list. It has over 1,000 pages on it of this area. So if you want to come build on this area, too, like we've done, then you'll be able to. And or receive one in your own territory and state republic. So that's powerful. And that's not just homes, but it's also property, period, unclaimed. So that's a perk for to come out. Also, too, I like to emphasize this. We come out, things is different. It's like you a branch, a tree done came together. You know what I mean? So when you come together, things are different. So instead of Aileen's book, The First World Order, the pre-colonization of the Americas by the African Moors, instead of that being 100, a C note, like the college compositions book, that's 65 when we come together. You see, then you also get autographs.
Okay.
You know, so there's nothing like meeting with the master teachers. You know what I mean? Shout out to you, too.
Excuse me.
Shout out
the book, you said the African colonization of the African Moors.
That's the subtitle, God, of the First World Order.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to order that.
Oh, you already on it, God. You got yours.
I got it. I sure do.
Yeah. So maybe you can make the Aries party, Aries. You know, we're going to do an Aries Taurus party. It's going to be like a blend of it. Because Aileen is a blend.
Because I'm Aries, okay.
Mm-hmm. It's important to come together. And then when we come together, we practice in these higher sciences so we can be busting up these chemtrails, you know, cloud busting and all of that. It's just, it's really, really
exactly.
good. It really is. Yeah. So March the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Yeah, you're going to be in the North Carolina State Republic, then you definitely got to come through. You see we adding on. We got Bruce Lee Beater right here down the street. You know he coming,
right.
So
right.
I'm really excited. Because y'all know your idol, y'all idol Bruce Lee. How many of y'all had posters on the wall? Y'all love Bruce Lee. Well, guess what? He got his head out. He got that behind toe up by the God.
Exactly.
And I know
his
Taekwondo.
I got his phone up.
They definitely discriminated. They discriminated. He beat Chuck Norris. He didn't tell you about how he beat Chuck Norris, nor did he tell you about how he tore Jim Kelly's behind up. You know, so he going to teach you technique. Yeah, live and in flesh. Yeah, I'm with it. I'm with it. We're going to have a great time. I'm excited. I'm definitely excited. Also, too, we building at our spot, you know, so... Oh, we got some callers. I want to hear from y'all. We got 856, area code 856.
Yes. Peace. I was calling because I was talking about the event, and I just heard you say that you can bring tents. Y'all gonna have somewhere to shower and everything, so we bring tents?
No, God. You're probably going to have to see this. No. Mm-mm. I mean, water hose, you know what I mean? Right now, we only been here, it's humble, it's modest, and we only been building for a year. But I do want to give a shout-out to everybody who put forth currency towards us. I just want to thank y'all because y'all got your 9-to-5, and y'all put forth currency towards us because we outside of the matrix and in it, it was like in and out. But y'all definitely sustain. And we just want to take a microscope of getting y'all products. I'm like happy about that because I be hearing about how some of our family members don't do that. It kind of hurt, but I'm like, I know customer service. Yeah, I do. So, you know, we'll definitely answer the phone, especially if you put some vibrations towards it. I don't care if it's 7 in the morning. I don't care if we missed your call. You know we calling you back. And those of you who know that, y'all know I'm telling the truth. And that's what we have to do. We have to treat each other better than we have treated the European. You feel me? That's how you do that. So we coming on these divine principles on this beautiful weather. And, oh, we even got games that enhance your mind. So I'm really excited. We're going to have a wonderful time. 14th year on our own shit. So that's beautiful because we're growing. You know, so Anything else you want to say, God? You got the address, the location?
Yes, yes. I'm trying to. Yeah, I'm just booking, trying to book a room now. I just heard you say a couple more spots. I was looking at Elizabeth, but I'm looking to look at a couple more spots.
Yeah, go ahead and book a hotel room. If you want to get a hotel room that's really close, get it in White Lake or Wilmington or Lumberton, White Lake.
Lumberton, White Lake, or Wilmington.
Yep, Fayetteville.
Yep. All right. That's
good. Word. We'll see you there, God.
All right.
Area code 720. We're dealing with 720 degrees. Area code P.
Grace and Peace, how you doing?
We're doing wonderfully. Oh.
Hello?
Yes, hello's love, God. Can you hear?
Oh, I say thanks for the whole program. I don't know if you hear me or not, but this was very enlightening. I mean, I love Bruce Lee. Now I see all that energy should be to my brother right here because he's just enlightening for me. And my little son, I took up White Dragon style, right? And my little son was taking karate, and I'm going and I'm saying, this is not – it didn't look right. So you need to take up what I took up because there ain't nothing in here to me looking right. Because the formation, it was no art to it. So I like the way he said, and I want to know, I'm in Colorado. How do I, like, get in touch to take up the art? Do you have anywhere in Colorado where I could take the art up, the proper art up for martial arts?
Oh, that's beautifully said. Actually, call them. Call them and come out. You know what I mean? We down the street, North Carolina, and I feel you, because I remember I was in Taekwondo, and you write all that bouncing and stuff, and, you know, and then also, like, kicking boards with, it didn't make sense, but it's, but they not going to teach us.
I'm watching my son do that, and I'm like, and he's like, can you beat this person? I'm like, looking, I'm like, yeah. I say, son, anything you go into, you already have the confidence that you're going to beat anybody. You just make the adjustments while you're in that fight. But I love that, and what else am I going to say? I forgot what I was going to say. It was so much on there, and I'm just getting into, like, the station, the blog talk, and that was been hard because I've been conscious as a little kid, and now I think I said a little kid coming from which, and I find out that he now is older. But do he have a website?
Yes, he does. Grandmaster?
Hello?
I know his number is still lit up and his microphone is still on. He did give his number, though. Yes, he does have a website, don't he, God?
You also have a
book.
May I interject?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Brother Jelani Bey. Brother that was just on the call, you said you study with White Dragon. Kung Fu?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, brother, how you doing? Yeah, I studied in Hartford, Connecticut. Yeah, back in the 70s.
Yes, I'm studying that, and I had an accident where my jaw was ripped off to the side, my lips was ripped off, my roof of my mouth splinter, had my brain hanging out of my head, and my eyeball socket destroyed, eyeball hanging. I only had 15 minutes to live and 85% to die. When I came out of all this action and everything, out of it, back to this dimension, I didn't want to come back, I had to, but I came back to the dimension, I went back into the Quinlan breathing technique. It got me through a lot of, got me back from, like, my mindset to be more than what I am, but it can be. And within 3 weeks of all my surgery, I was out the hospital.
Oh.
But that Quinlan breathing technique, what I learned in Pai Long, helped me through my recovery because that person in 1998 that got hit, he died. I had to come from ground zero to learn who I am now. And the Quinlan breathing technique helped me with that.
That's a powerful testimony, God's all. That's good.
And now, like, I talk more now because all through my life, my conversation been trying to cut off when I was little. Tongue go my got I jumped off a swing, bit my tongue. It was hanging over by a shred, and it had to heal itself because back then they couldn't sew it up. And then I got picked up. I was talking, and now at this action, I can't stop talking because I seek more knowledge is all in my life. That's what knowledge and wisdom is all we were praying for. I want knowledge and wisdom, and I'm glad that now it's coming together because I feel much better. Well, thank you for all this. I'm going to let you go because I could be long-winded.
Okay. Well, we do appreciate your
question.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, well, my website is twka.co. twka.co.
I got you. Gracious peace to y'all. And yeah, bless, I'll be listening to y'all on a regular.
Good.
And also, before I leave, I was trying to look for that. I was talking to that picture, but I couldn't find a picture of the one with Bruce Lee throwing a punch at you. Because after that, I'm going to say one thing else. I was watching a show about Bruce Lee with him with the nunchucks and him doing paddleball and being two people and doing kicks while he's doing it. But until you enlighten me tonight, that didn't impress me no more.
That's just trick camera.
Oh.
That's just trick camera. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we know how they do that. That's just trick camera. That's not real.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. See,
hi,
I've been in movies, so I know how they do all that.
Okay. I need to post you up. You're the martial art king to me.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
he
all
is.
All that is trick camera. They can take the cameras and make it look like you're doing anything they want.
That's true. Yep, that is true. So Grandmaster, I wanted to ask you while you're back on the line. What happened with the Chuck Norris fight?
Yeah, I didn't mention that. Or the Jim Kelly and who else? Yeah.
No.
He tried to do his spinning back kick. And see, every time you get ready to do a spinning back kick, like I was saying, you telegraph. Well, he would move his shoulder, his right shoulder forward, and then he would spin and come in with his right leg to do the spinning back kick. Well, most people back up and try and block it. It's too fast. You can't back up and block. So all you got to do is step in and it go by you, and I execute a punch right down to the kidney, which sent him to the floor. They stopped the match, which was the winning point, and went into a room, said they got to have a meeting. Chuck Norris raised his hand as to say, what? And they went into a room, and then they came out and said, well, we got to do it all over. And he just did a little something on my arm, and they just quickly gave him the point for the victory. He wrote on my program, he said, Vic, you know I didn't have nothing to do with that. So they were just right out cheap. And he wrote on my program to the guy that beat me, and then his wife wrote on her program to the guy that beat my husband. Because everybody seen, you know, Bowley, you know, they was cheating, that I had done won. But that's how much of a gentleman that he was.
Right.
And Jim Kelly It was just a regular fight with the team championships, and when we fought, I beat him. But the news people, the magazine people, they don't even mention it. They don't mention our fight. They don't mention him being there, nor me being there. But all the other fights, they have mentioned it. That's how prejudiced they were.
Grandmaster, now what you think that we need to do about, you have formed your own organization since 1975.
Yes.
How is it?
We're getting a lot of coverage
today
now because of the Facebook and the internet.
Right.
But back
okay.
in the day, see, we didn't even have the internet.
Right.
We didn't have the cell phones, cameras, and stuff.
Right,
so now
right.
we get a lot more coverage because we got all
right.
of this ingenuity to work with.
Right. How is the racism now? Has it gotten any better? I mean, as far
yeah,
as...
Yeah, it's a lot better. It's a lot
okay.
better. All the way around, it's a lot better. But still, there's a lot of prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
They still ain't writing about us.
Right.
That's
now, have
I
you
say.
Seen
you
the documentary?
You got to get on the website and Facebook and start calling out these writers, O'Hara and John Corcoran, who writes the history books, and Lennox, who write for the magazine.
Right. Now, we know that there was some... There, not only did you bring forth with Joe Louis on the, you know, as far as, I guess you can say, kickboxing onto to the nation and to the world on the, like you said, the Merv Griffin show, but you also appeared on Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
People and different TV shows also.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Also, the
That's
worldwide
right. like,
world sports.
It, I couldn't explain everything within one day. It would probably take two
right,
days.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I understand. Right.
Hold on, I got another call.
Okay. All right, so let me go back to the phone lines here. Let me see. Brother L, you have any comments, anything that you want to talk about as far as this is concerned?
Yes, I was given to ask him, have you ever met Steven Seagal?
Okay.
So I don't speak to you much later.
Right.
Yep. Anybody else got any questions?
Yes, I was wondering,
yes.
have you ever met Steven Seagal?
Huh? What about Steven?
Yeah, but wonder, have you ever met him?
No, I haven't never met him, but I think he's a good martial artist. He's
okay.
the only actor besides Chuck Norris that I would say have real karate techniques.
Okay.
Well, he's got Aikido techniques, but his techniques are more real. See, the movie directors dictate to the actors how they want them moving. And I just think that Steven Seagal got enough clout that he can tell the directors how he want to be doing his moves.
Okay.
But see, with Bruce Lee and the rest of them, they just swing and strike the way that the director want to see him moving, which is a lot of action. And in the martial art, it's not a lot of action. It's quick, bam, 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 and it's over. We don't hit a guy and he hit us back and we fall over the tables and get up and hit him and he falls over the chairs and the table and back and forth and all that stuff. We throw two or three blows and it's over.
That's right. One thing, they don't last that long.
No. So the directors are saying, we don't want to see no little karate technique. We want to see a lot of cowboy action stuff.
A lot of jump up flying side kicks and round heel kicks and a lot of yelling. Dancing around.
Once we hit the guy, it's all over. If not, we're not doing the martial arts.
So you got some of them even doing the Ali shuffle, you know.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be excite the crowd and get the crowd to roar.
Yeah. Now where are you at?
I'm in the St. Louis, Missouri Republic.
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
All right. Well, I'd like to get you into our association.
Okay. I have your number down, so I will be talking to you.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
So I was early in the martial arts. I was also into Bruce Lee myself. Like I said earlier, I had read his book called The Tao of Jeet Kune Do.
Mm-hmm.
And you were right, because a lot of the Black Belt magazines and the karate magazines hardly mention any Moors in the martial arts. And when they did mention them, they always just mentioned about how they lost to a lot of the so-called white, you know, martial artists and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I know one, Kareem Allah, how he was supposed to lose against, I can't think of his name. It was a while back in the 70s. And they always talk about how Superfoot Wallace was so fast with his feet.
Yeah.
And Chuck Norris was so good, and Joe Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but you hardly, very, very rarely hear about any black, so-called black anyway, martial art champions and things like that.
That's right.
You know, and I was wondering. Also, I was wondering, have you ever had an opportunity to meet Jet Li?
No.
Okay.
No, all of them are just really movie stars.
Okay.
The only real competitor was Chuck Norris that do the movies and all.
Okay. So did you ever meet Ron Van Cleef?
Yeah, but we never fought. I know him. He's a good fighter.
Okay.
He made a couple movies and stuff.
Okay. Yes, I was too surprised about what he said about the Koreans, how they are.
Yeah.
You were right when they said they came out with the red belt as versus the brown belt, you know. And that kind of took me by surprise too. When I was growing up, I was told that the red belt was a grandmaster belt.
That's right.
And
how can the red belt be a brown belt in Taekwondo?
Yeah. So you started out as a white belt. Then the system they had was a white belt, a yellow belt, and a green belt. Then you had a brown belt. Then you had the black belt.
Yeah.
But there was no red belt until you, like Oyama, like you said back
in 52. Yeah, Oyama, Nishiyama, all them guys, yeah.
And the father of...
How you think they would feel? Turn over in their grave.
I believe they would. And especially the father of Gichin Funakoshi.
Yeah.
I think he was the father of Shotokan, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's in Funakoshi, yes. And I have done a lot of studying and reading on the martial arts. and study on the Thailand arts, like the Muay Thai kickboxing style. And I think it was what you were talking about, the Taekwondo style. So I think it was, the, was that the Voodoo Kwan style of Taekwondo that started that red belt stuff?
No, Taekwondo.
Okay, I can't remember.
Taekwondo started. Well, see, we got four major systems, and then we got hundreds of styles.
Okay.
In Chinese system, you got Kung Fu and Tai Chi and Wing Chun and all that. Then under the Okinawan system, you got Shorin-Ryu, Isshin-Ryu, Wado-Ryu, Shorei-Ryu, and all. Then under the Japanese system, you got Shotokan and Shitoryu and all. And then under the Korean system, you got Taekwondo, Tang Sudo, Hapkido.
That's the one I took up first. Yes, Hapkido. When I took up Hapkido, that's how I got really proficient in Judo and Aikido. Aikido. What it looked like to me was Judo, Aikido, Taekwondo combined. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, Aikido is taking them in one direction and reversing it and then back, and they flipped over. It's like in a circle. You carry the person in a circle now.
Yes, you do. Yes, like a force of energy. You well, what I was taught that you directed their energy in a different direction.
Yeah.
And you have to learn how to direct that that energy.
Yeah,
in that circle.
You know.
Yes.
Now, what's your name?
My name is Fahim.
Fahim, okay.
Mm-hmm. Fahim Rickling L.
All right, well, I'm going to be counting on you to get up with me and getting you into our association and all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said, I'll get the number down, and I will be calling you for advice and everything. You know, you shed a lot of light on me, on Bruce Lee, though.
Oh, I got a whole bunch of shit. I just couldn't get it all in just, you know, an hour or two.
Like I said,
I know you, Brother Fahim, that you made mention of Bill's Superfoot Wallace. Grandmaster, before you go, can you speak about, you know, about that incident?
Well, yeah, we was all coming up under the USKA, and he was a good fighter, no doubt. And my techniques against his is that I'm going to stop your leg by throwing a 45-degree angle across it. When I throw a 45-degree angle across your leg and stop you at the knee, it stops you because you can't kick without bending your knee, right?
That's right.
That's right.
You got to bend your knee to kick. Well, if I control your knee, then I control your kick. So instead of trying to block the kick, I control the knee. And by controlling the knee, I'm controlling the kick before it ever gets off.
Exactly.
Now, how would you prepare
for that?
Well,
that's what I did with Bill Wallace, and the score, I looked to his back to make him think I'm trying to get to his back, going to throw something to his back, and came up under his guards with a ridge hand and folded him over and then came down with a shoot up to the back of the neck.
Okay. Now, how do you normally prepare for a match, Grandmaster? Would you, study?
Mentally.
Right, would you go... Right. I mean, how would you prepare? Would you go and do like a boxer, look at the footage, you know, from prior fights that they might have had
none of that. Mm-hmm. None of that. Matter of fact, I didn't even want to know what the guy had up so or anything else. It was always mental. It's what comes going to do.
Right.
And what I'm going to do, you can't stop it. Well, you better look out for this guy. He's got a... No, I don't want him to even know. I don't need to know what he got. He needs to know what I got, because
right.
I'm the one that's going to be the dominant one in the ring. I'm going to throw my technique. I don't have to worry about blocking or worrying about his technique. He got to worry about my technique.
Because
I'm the one that's going to be doing the striking. I'm not going to be running around the ring waiting, trying to see what he's going to do and what he's got. Because I don't care what he's got and what he's going to do. He's got to worry about me. So it's attitude. It's knowing your technique and having confidence in your technique and going out there and doing it. You have to attend some of my seminars to really comprehend a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about, because it's more mental than physical. I put my hands up and I got 8 Rican strikes, backhand strikes. Number one, like my hand is to my chest like a gorilla, beating on his chest. So my hands is up there in my ready position. Number one, it swings down and strike down low, like to the groin or the lower stomach, like you're going through a picket fence. So if you got that opening, I'm going to swing my arm down and pop you right down into the gut or the groin with number one. Number two, it comes straight across, and I'm coming in between your guard, so ever how you holding your hands, it goes right out like over a table. It goes laterally, like I'm just swinging right over a kitchen table or something other. Boom. Number three, I bring my hand from my chest up to my shoulder, to my ear, and come down, straight down between the picket fence again, but up high. So ever high your hands are, and I see that number three is in, I'm coming down. If you're holding your arms at an angle, then I'm going to come in at a 45-degree angle with a backhand strike and tag you upside the head there with that one. So one of those is going to get in, because you can't cover your whole body. Your two arms cannot cover and protect your whole body. You got to be open somewhere.
Right.
So no matter where you open, that's where one of those strikes is going to come to. Make sense?
Yes, it does. A lot of sense.
Exactly.
So we're fighting. I'm going to strike you high up to the top of your head with a punch. I'm going to come in and punch high and let you see it coming and make you have to block it. So either one or two things is going to happen. You're either going to have to block it, or either you get hit. Simple as that. I'm coming at your forehead with a punch, and you got to block it, or either you're going to get hit. Because I'm coming in deep enough, you ain't going to be able to back away or duck or whatever, because I'm coming all on top of you with that punch. Well, when I get ready to do it again, you're going to be blocking high, so where you're going to be open is low.
Low.
So I know you're going to be open low because I'm coming in at your head again. So I'm coming with a 1-2, and that lead hand is coming to your head. But my point, you're going to block that one, but my punch is coming middle or low, and I'm going to score with that.
Right.
Or if I come into your chest or your lower stomach and I'm punching down, bang, and I come in powerful, I either score or either you block it. So when I come in the next time, I'm coming in down there, and now you're going to lower your hands to block it, and therefore you're going to be open high.
Exactly.
So I know where you're going to be open before you do. because I'm leading the attack. Make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
If I got a pile of rocks in my hand and I throw them up in your face, you're going to lift your hands up to block them from hitting your face and getting in your ass.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I know that, don't I? So when I throw them rocks up there, you're going to be open down in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the logic. That's the scientificness of this karate stuff. That's why I couldn't go along with what Bruce Lee says. He don't believe in a system. He don't believe in style and all that stuff. Well, you can't just get out there and do any old thing. That's why I beat him so bad.
Mm.
Because you're going to build a building. It doesn't matter if you're going to build it in China, Germany, Okinawa, or whatever. It's certain principles that apply. It got to be level. It got to be straight. Got to be off at an angle. You can't build a building just any old kind of way, just nail something up any kind of way. It's going to collapse.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Does this make sense to you?
Oh, yeah.
If I'm fighting you from a side stance, Ibadachi, you either have to strike at my head, the side of my head, near the ear, around the side, or either you have to come around with a roundhouse punch or a hook kick or hook punch or a roundhouse kick to the gut or so. So you either got to kick around or punch around me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm fighting you from the side. Because if you punch at my head, all I got to do is one thing, and that is to lean my head over on my shoulder away from you and raise that one shoulder, and you can't hit my head. See, you can do it with your wife right there standing there, just have her to take her hand and push your head. And then as you get ready to push your head, lay your head, your ear, over on the opposite shoulder, all the way over, and raise the other shoulder up, and that hand is going to miss your head automatically.
Mm.
It's physical. It's science. Does that make sense?
It much sense, yeah.
Get your wife and tell her just push your head, and then when she get ready to push it, lay it all the way over and raise your other shoulder. And you don't even have to block it. It's out of the way. Well, where is he going to be open at? Is it in his rib? Because anytime you raise your hand, your arm, your rib cage opens. And if your rib cage opens, your ribs are vulnerable. It's easier to break a rib or get struck in the rib. Bam. So you open. So I know where you're going to be open before you do. Because I'm leaning my head, kind of giving it to you, and hope you go ahead on and shoot for it. And you're either going to shoot from my head, either you're going to come around. And if you come around with a roundhouse kick or a punch, then I'm coming straight in at you with a straight punch or a reverse punch and catch you coming around. See, that's physics. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So I don't have to be as fast as you. I don't have to be as strong as you. All I got to do is have my timing right with my techniques, and I got you. You can be twice as fast as me. You can be twice as strong as me. But what good is your strength if you can't hit me? What good is your speed if you can't hit me?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
See, that's knowledge. That's not jumping up and down, bouncing around, doing the alley shuffle and think you're going to be fast enough to come in on a guy that knows something.
That's right.
You see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah. Exactly where you're coming from.
So, if I'm fighting you and I bring my arm across your legs at a 45-degree angle, you can't kick me, Bill Wallace.
No.
Or anybody else, because it's blocked, it's stopped. I'm not going to back away and try and block your leg because I may not be fast enough.
And most times you're not fast enough.
Like when you back away, that's giving them leverage to kick you.
That's right, to give them the distance. But if I stand close to you nose to nose, say, and you wouldn't really get that close, but if I stand nose to nose, like right down your breath, hey man, I'm going to kick your tail. Hey, you're not going to kick me because I'm too close, right?
Right.
So you're going to back away, or either you're going to try and push me back so that you can kick. Well, if I'm standing that close, I don't have to worry about you kicking. All I got to worry about is you punching. So if I bring my hand across your arms at a 45, then just like your legs, I got your hands blocked out. You're going to have to come around and punch me. You got to punch around. And if you did, that's going to leave you open for me to shoot straight down. See, that's logic. That's theory.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's what a lot of people don't understand. So it doesn't matter how fast you are, Chuck Norris. It doesn't matter how fast you think you are, Bruce Lee. It doesn't matter how strong you may think you are, Joe Louis or Mike Stone. You got to overcome this theory, these obstacles, this scientificness. That's why I say karate is scientific. When I bring my hand into the center of my body and twisting my wrist, I'm coming straight down inside of you.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Yes. How did you rate Jim Kelly? I mean, did the
Well, he fight from a catch stance, which was good, but he wanted to do a little too much springing and bouncing, you know.
Okay.
And he was good, but it's just knowing how to cut things off and how to come in on them.
Right, okay.
So it really just doesn't matter who I'm fighting. I just follow my principles and theory.
Okay. Have you ever heard of a grandmaster? He had passed away a while back now. His name was Hugh McDonald.
Who?
Hugh McDonald.
I don't think so. I know there was a Bill McDonald.
That could have been his name. Because he has studied in Japan for a long time.
Yeah, I'm not that good on names, but
okay.
Faces I'm a little better at. But I just horse me, and I'm old man now too.
Okay. Okay, that's okay.
Yeah. I do good to remember anybody's name. That's why I gotta write them down.
Right. Okay. Understandable.
Yes, a lot of theory. A lot of theory.
Yes. I also did you ever meet June Lee personally?
Did I meet June Lee?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I've attended a lot of his seminars.
Okay, because I knew you
were learned one of his trainers. A lot of Taekwondo from him.
Okay.
He also cheated at his tournament, wouldn't let me fight for first and second place.
Yeah, I remember you saying it earlier on the show.
Yeah. He was in our USK organization. And see, I was the first chief instructor for the United States Karate Association. I was the first one to get the Trias International Award patch, which is the top fighters in that organization.
Oh, okay.
I was the first world champion in that organization. I helped build the USKA by winning at all the tournaments. And see, I've won in kata. I won in every kata contest.
Mm.
Also, I won in the weapons contest.
I would finish first, second, or third in the counter division and the weapons and in demonstration and in kumite.
Hmm.
They should come home with 3 and 4 trophies at every tournament. And that's when we only had 3 places. Now y'all got 200 and 300 places.
Hmm.
You got weight division, all different kind of belts. You got the young people, 18 to 20 or 30, and then the 30 to 45. And I mean, everybody gets a trophy nowadays. So there's only 2 age group difference that you got to fight.
Wow.
16 and 17 fight, and then the 18 and 19 fight, and then 20, 21. Come on, man. Golly. Y'all got 200 divisions. No wonder everybody's a champion, the world champion and all. We had a world champion. There's only 3 trophies. You better be one of them 3.
Yes, well, that's how they're doing it nowadays, huh?
Yeah, it's just too many trophy places out there.
Wow. Mm. They really had brought the martial art tournaments down then, a whole lot from what it used to be in the 60s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah. And the judges didn't give you a point if you're leaning. And you're off balance. You throw a kick and fall down, you didn't get no points. You throw a backhand strike and fall off balance, you didn't get no points. If you was leaning out too far, reaching at the man, you didn't get no points. Even if it hit him. And if you didn't hit him with your first 2 knuckles, that's no point anyway.
No.
And if you kick and you wasn't kicking with the ball of the foot, or side kick with the heel edge, you can get a point anyway. Even if you knock breath out of the guy and knock him down, you still didn't use proper technique. They don't call nothing like that. You hit a man with any part of the foot you want, and you get a point. Not if I'm refereeing. Oh, you see what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Running kata. You better not be doing no flips and cartwheels and flips and stuff.
That's going all around in a circle, and all that.
5 and 6 times. Ki-ai, 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 ki-ai. And you better be able to end up where you started at on the exact spot. You can't start in this spot and then end up over here or over there.
And all that dancing and bobbing and weaving, huh?
Yeah. See, that's the art of karate. See, the art of karate is a lot harder than just doing any old thing, any movement.
All right. We got
this
another.
People just do any movement, and they call it karate.
We have another question. We got area code 864. Area code 864, you on the line.
Dr. Aleem, thank you so much for putting our Elder Grandmaster on with us tonight. The first lesson is the classroom. Thank you so much. And I'm driving and my car will drop sometime, and I would like to get his phone number again. I'm calling from South Carolina, Greenville.
910-253-6121.
Repeat that, I'm sorry. No. Repeat the last 4.
6121.
Gotcha. Thank you. Thank you.
910-253-6121.
It is a pleasure to talk to you. Now, I can tell the folks that I talked to, the brother that beat Bruce Lee, Jim Kelly, and Chuck Norris.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I mean, I had no idea. I had no idea.
I want you guys to start getting on the YouTube and Facebook and the Internet and call out these writers. John Cochran and Emily Farkas and O'Hara, who writes Black Belt Magazine, and Lennox, who writes Official Karate. Ask them why they don't write about Vic Moore and the minorities and all. Call them up. Come on. People says, I don't know about it. Well, that's because they don't write about it.
Right, right. That's true. Wow. Okay. All right, I'm going to do my part.
I'm the first African-American national karate champion in the world.
Hmm.
That should be newsworthy to them.
It should be.
Wow. Wow.
I trained a chimpanzee, the first one to train a chimp to do karate. That's bigger than beating Bruce Lee.
should have made news.
Wow.
Should have made news. Headline news.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bruce Lee thought he was so fast that nobody could stop his punch. I know several guys do that. He never fought. He never beat anybody. He was no national champion. You can't name nobody that he defeated or any tournament that he won. The movies is for play. That's choreographed. They can make it look like you the world's fastest. They can beat a whole group of people.
Exactly. When it's your movie also.
Yeah. The movies are for play. The ring is for real.
That's right.
I mean, he was a good actor. We can't take that away from him. Yeah, he act good. Did a lot of, you know, screaming and hollering and stuff. Excitement, you know, that's good. I like this movie. Didn't like his technique, but I like the movie.
Right.
Because we don't punch that way. We don't kick that way. We don't swing our leg and swing our hands like cowboys and stuff. Yeah, karate is an art and a science.
Yes, it is.
So the moves have to be artistic, nice, and pretty moves, and they got to be scientific. They got to have some science behind it.
Yeah, it has to be, sure, too. You know.
And just swing your leg and swing your arms any kind of way. I mean, that's what they do in street fighting. Just two girls out on the street just slapping, swinging their arms. They call that karate nowadays.
Very do.
They call it bra ripping too.
Yeah. Yeah, any old thing. As long as they got a karate suit on or a belt around them, yeah, they